Today is July 15th, 1973. This is reel three of three reels concerning the Alaska Railroad's redriving of the Golden Spike ceremony in Nenana, Alaska. Speaking as Kathleen Mike Dalton, I'm making this tape for the Tanana Yukon Historical Society. I'll read a brief history of the Alaska Railroad. This brief history was prepared by the railroad and given to the press and any other interested people, which included me. I'll also go over the names of the special guests this day. The railroad manager, through his office, Mr. Pickerel, supplied me with this information, a little more detailed information on the special guest today. Mr. Bert Winterstrom, who's mentioned, all of these people I think are mentioned on Reel 1 at the ceremony at the north end of the railroad bridge at Nenana. Mr. Winterstrom is traveling with his wife, May, today. He retired from the railroad on April 30, 1964, after 44 years of service. He was born July 7, 1903. He's 70 years old. The date of employment with the Alaska Railroad, April 21, 1920. Some of the positions held with the railroad: chief of the accounting branch, budget and accounting officer, accountant, chief clerk, mail clerk, janitor, and laborer. You can see those were taken in reverse order. He started out as laborer and ended up as chief of the accounting branch. Another guest today is Mrs. Muriel, M-U-R-I-E-L-C, Gottwals, spelled G-O-T-W-A-L-S. Her husband was Colonel John C. Gottwals, Chief Engineer, Alaska Road Commission, and Vice Chairman, the Alaska Railroad, as of July 15, 1923. She and Mr. Gottwals were present at the July 15, 1923 ceremony, as are all of these people I'm talking about. Today she's traveling in Alaska with her daughter Mary, who's a school teacher. They both reside in St. Louis, Missouri. Mr. Gottwals died in 1946. Mrs. Robert Olquist, or Mrs. Ethel Olquist, she was formerly Ethel A. Long, and she's here today with her husband Robert Olquist. She lived in Nenana in 1923. And in the pictures in 1923, she appears in a picture with President Harding driving the Golden Spike. Well, at the ceremony, the picture she appears in is one with President Harding holding her in his arms. She was just an infant at the time. She attended school in Nenana through grade 5. Her father was Harry A. Long, and was a conductor on the Alaska Railroad. He retired in the late 1940s. Ethel is currently a high school librarian just outside of Tacoma, Washington. Traveling to Nenana today from her home in Wasilla is Mrs. Arthur Holbrook. She is here with her husband. Also her brother Walter Teeland and his wife are here. I think his wife is here. Yes. Mrs. Holbrook and Mr. Teelan both lived in Nenana in 1923. Before living in Nenana in 1923, Mrs. Holbrook lived on the Yukon River. After about 2 years in Nenana, her parents and four children moved briefly to Seward and then to Anchorage, where Mrs. Holbrook lived until about 2 years ago. She and her husband are retired now and live on Lake Lucille. She recalls what an exciting event the 1923 ceremony was to the children and remembers watching the event from a hillside, probably the same hillside I'm standing on today. She also recalls shaking hands with President Harding and then getting in line again for a second handshake. Another guest today who was present at the same spot in 1923 is Walter Teeland. He's here with his wife. They live in Wasilla, which is another community on the Alaska Railroad. He also was a child here in 1923 and participated in the events with his sister. He's well known, along with his wife, as owner and operator for about 25 years of Teeland's grocery store in Wasilla. They sold the store last November to two young couples from Chicago, and right now they're building a new home located on Lake Lucille. Present today in Nenana and living in Fairbanks is Mrs. Jessie Anderson. She normally lives in Fairbanks in the summer months and spends the winter outside visiting children and grandchildren. Her maiden name was Jessie Mottcham, M-O-T-C-H-M-A-N. And she lived in Nenana in 1923 with her parents and several brothers and sisters. She attended school here in Nenana with the Teelands and witnessed the driving of the original Golden Spike. Nenana was a small community, and the 1923 ceremony was a very exciting event to the townspeople, especially the children. She had contacted Mrs. Arthur Holbrook about her intention of visiting Nenana for the reenactment of the ceremony this summer, and it was through Mrs. Holbrook that the railroad learned that Mrs. Anderson was present at the 1923 event. Another guest here today is Mrs. Robert Seabold, or Mrs. Flora Seabold. The last name is spelled S-I-E-B-O-L-D. Her maiden name was McDonald. She's here today to help celebrate the 50th anniversary of this driving of the Golden Spike. Her tie to the railroad is in 1923 was her father. He was an engineer. His name was Donald McDonald. He was an engineer with the Alaska Road Commission, and he designed the Tanana River Bridge. Another guest here today, whom we heard on another tape helping drive the spike, is Sam Chamus. He's called Sam, but his first name is, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, but it's spelled S-O-T-E-R. Last name is spelled C-H-I-A-M-I-S. This spelling according to the information supplied by the Alaska Railroad. Sam Chamus lives in Anchorage now. He's here today with his wife. He was born in Thebes, Greece. Probably mispronouncing that too. It's spelled T-H-E-B-E-S. He was naturalized in Fairbanks in 1926. Records indicate that he began employment on the railroad in 1917 and worked intermittently for the Alaska Road Commission and the Alaska Railroad. He was a section foreman when last employed, which was on November 28, 1942. That's 31 years ago. He was working for the railroad at the time of the original Golden Spike ceremony. Mrs. Bernadine M. Prince is here today, visiting from Tacoma, Washington. She retired September 8, 1967, after 19 years of service with the Alaska Railroad, and after more than 30 years of government service. She was employed by the Alaska Railroad July 27, 1948. Positions held by Bernadine Prince were secretary to the assistant or to the general manager and chief of office services. She also edited the Rail Belt Reporter. She is the author of a 2-volume Alaska Railroad pictorial history and is now planning her 3rd book. I'm going to read about a 2-page background history, brief history of the Alaska Railroad. And then some notes on the Fairbanks spur line. This information was provided by the Alaska Railroad. The Alaska Railroad had its origins as the privately financed Alaska Central Railway in 1903. This effort ended in bankruptcy in 1908. It was succeeded by the Alaska Northern Railway, which reached 71 rail miles from Seward before becoming virtually inoperative by 1915. Following route surveys by a congressionally authorized railroad commission, President Taft recommended construction with federal funds. Congress responded in 1914 with the necessary legislation. Construction required almost 8 years and $60 million in federal appropriations. While both freight and passenger trains operated from Seward to Fairbanks in 1923 and after, maintenance costs were very high, and the combined populations of Seward, Fairbanks, and Anchorage, totaling 5,400 in 1930, could not generate sufficient traffic to make rail operations profitable. It was 1938 when, for the first time, revenues exceeded expenses, and since that time, congressional appropriations have not been required for operation of the railroad. During World War II, the railroad's income jumped dramatically from hauling both military and civilian supplies and material, and reserve was built up against the future costs of rehabilitating a railroad literally worn out in wartime service to the nation. This program cost around $100 million eventually, and involved major overhaul and construction, justified by the government's determination that military bases in Rail Belt Alaska would retain their defense importance in peacetime. Through the years, new operating techniques, use of labor-saving equipment, the changeover from steam to diesel-powered locomotives, and the establishment of car, barge, and train ship service, linking Alaska directly to stateside railroads, enabled the Alaska Railroad to operate in the black despite a sharply competitive trucking industry as highway systems were improved and enlarged. Then came the earthquake of March 27, 1964, which resulted in damages and destruction to the rail bed, equipment, and buildings, which required more than $27 million in repairs. In spite of this widespread devastation, a crash program soon restored freight and passenger service, although permanent repairs were not fully accomplished until June of 1966, when the new Seward dock construction was completed. 50 years of Department of Interior responsibility terminated in April of 1967, when the Alaska Railroad became a bureau of the Federal Railroad Administration under the newly created Department of Transportation. From completion of the original construction in 1923 to the present, the Alaska Railroad has served Alaska and has been a major factor in its growth. During that time span, 11 general managers have been delegated broad authority for the operation of the railroad and related activities. Walker S. Johnson has served in this capacity since January 1, 1972. Some facts and figures on the Alaska Railroad. Equipment. The Alaska Railroad fleet consists in part of 1,878 freight cars, 419 containers and related trailer components, 44 freight and passenger locomotives, 54 passenger type cars, and numerous special equipment such as snow plows, spreaders, derricks, and work equipment. dock, car barge ramp, and wharf facilities. The Alaska Railroad presently interchanges rail cars with three water carriers via roll-on, roll-off ramps located at Whittier, Alaska. During the last year, some 11,940 cars, northbound and southbound, were received and forwarded by such operations. Three water carriers now engaged in transport of rail equipment are Canadian National Railroad, who pioneered the car float with the Alaska Railroad, Alaska Hydro Train, operating between Seattle and Whittier, and the Alaska Trainship Corporation, operating to Alaska from Vancouver, Canada. The Alaska Railroad operates the year-round ice-free port of Seward, having a finger pier 600 feet long each side and 200 feet wide on the seaward end. The pier was constructed in 1966 of steel and concrete. There is also a marginal dock at Whittier, 1,000 feet long, with a heated warehouse most of its entire length, and two barge slips used for rail car roll-on, roll-off transfers. Within interior Alaska, the Alaska Railroad operates a dock at Nenana, located on the Tanana River some 60 air miles south of Fairbanks. This facility serves the interior waterways of the Tanana and Yukon Rivers and related streams. The main equipment media is composed of two steel-hulled river tugs of 1,200 horsepower that continually shuttle barges of petroleum and other cargo during the navigable summer season. Alaska Railroad trackage. The Alaska Railroad track presently spans some 522 miles with 11 tunnels, 73 bridges, 168 trestles, and 1,507 culverts. The latest major addition was the Fairbanks Spur. Financing of the railroad. The Alaska Railroad is financed through a revolving fund. That is, money that we earn goes into an account from which we may draw funds for capital improvements for equipment and track. By this method, we finance improvements for our operation. Government subsidies are not handed out to the Alaska Railroad for operating purposes. We earn our money from freight and passenger revenues, or we do not have it to spend. We must operate from our revenues. There have been no appropriations for capital replacement since 1956, except for earthquake recovery funds. The fiscal year 1973 payroll will total nearly $14 million. Of this, over $9 million has been or will be received by employees in Anchorage and adjacent areas, over $2 million to those in the Fairbanks area, and the balance to employees in outlying locations. Some notes on the Fairbanks Spur. On October 6, 1972, the Alaska Railroad completed the laying of a 10-mile spur track to Fairbanks International Airport on a subgrade that was a result of a unique community enterprise involving federal, state, municipal agencies, the military, and the private sector. Although a spur track to the airport had been under discussion for several years, it really began in 1970 when a group of private individuals known as the Metro Consortium initiated discussion with the railroad and other groups, which culminated in the decision to begin actual construction. The route mutually agreed upon departed from the Eielson branch at mile post 5.9. It proceeded south and then westerly through a potential industrial area near the Tanana River to a terminus at mile post 10 on the west side of Fairbanks International Airport. Since the railroad announced that it could fund not more than $1 million necessary for the construction of the track alone, it was agreed that the various landholders would be responsible for the placing of the subgrade on their respective properties. Under this arrangement, the U.S. Army, Fort Wainwright, constructed the first 1¾ miles of subgrade, plus a revision of the Eielson branch. The next mile was placed by the Rahoy brothers, who were then followed by Bobby Mitchell and his Metro Consortium, for the next 4 miles. The State Department of Public Works, Division of Aviation, completed the remaining 3 1/4 miles lying in the airport reserve. Other agencies participated in providing right-of-way, sources of borrow material, the relocation of utility lines, etc. Due to the shortness of the construction season, it was decided to use the panel method of laying track. Panels were assembled by a production line method, trucked to the railroad subgrade where they were laid end-to-end in a manner very similar to building a model railroad. Using this method, it was possible to lay as much as 1/2 mile of completed track in one day. The dream of a direct railroad link to Fairbanks International Airport is now a reality. Aviation fuel can be moved directly to bulk storage yards, and dry cargo destined for the North Slope can be offloaded into waiting aircraft. Once again, the delay in construction of the pipeline has been turned into good advantage to better prepare Fairbanks for its leading role in this multi-billion-dollar project.